Now may the words of my mouth and the meditation of all our hearts be now and always acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. So we come now to the Feast of the Ascension, to that moment in the church calendar, that moment in the telling forth and proclaiming of our creed, which is, I think, at once the most difficult and yet also the most comforting and encouraging of our doctrines. So I want to deal a little bit with, if I can, first with the difficulty, so that when we come to the comfort and encouragement, it needn't be, as it were, shadowed or held in some kind of parenthesis. So let us boldly deal with the difficulty. And the difficulty is to do with the entire difficulty of language about heaven, language about the supreme and ultimate reality, that from which the visible world springs, that which will be perhaps its final conclusion, but that of which we have no direct experience. And therefore we are obliged to use metaphor, an analogy. This is the only way we can think. If we have to say, well, a little like this, a little like that. But because we're quite concrete thinkers, we can sometimes be tripped up by our own metaphorical language, and we forget that it's metaphorical and we take it literally. So we have an immediate difficulty if we try to take language, profound language, important language from the Bible and the Creed about the ascension of Jesus Christ. If we try to take it simply and only literally, we have a problem. We obviously have an immediate problem in that what is up? I mean, up is clearly one direction at one point in the earth, and another direction at another point of the earth, and a completely different direction if you're on another planet. I mean, it's a relative term in relation to a gravitational pull, and you're not going to get very far if you, as it were, try and locate. Of course, people have tried to locate. There's the amount of the ascension, and I suppose you could draw a straight line, couldn't you, from where you thought the amount of the ascension was. But the trouble, of course, is that the earth on which you were drawing the straight line is swinging wildly round. So your line is veering somewhat. So you have immense problems. But the fact that we need to recognize that from the beginning this was never literal language is really important. Because one of the supposedly knockdown arguments used by kind of a large atheist state like the Soviet Union as it once was, after they'd sent Yuri Gagarin up into space, they sent him on a tour of all the Soviet socialist republics, because they were upset that people were still believing in God and secretly going to church, and that the mysteries of the church were still flourishing, notwithstanding the diktats of Lenin and Stalin. They sent this poor chap round to say to halls which had been packed by not voluntary people, I've been up in space. I've had a look around. There is no big sapphire throne. I didn't see anything. Relax, lads, there's no God up there. You know, as though the profundity of faith and the mystery of the church was to be solved by a kind of spatial fix. So we have a problem with taking metaphorical language literally. But if we're not to take it literally, that does not mean that we are to dismiss it. And particularly not to dismiss language which is bequeathed to us in the Holy Scriptures, language which is in some profound sense, I believe, God-breathed. There are, as it were, perhaps some privileged metaphors, some kinds of language that will help us enormously. So let's just begin with this metaphor, if that's what we're to call it now, to try and help us understand what is meant by heaven and by the holiness of heaven, which is the metaphor of height. If you think about it, actually, key moments in the biblical narrative from very early on are to do with height and mountains. And it obviously appeals, in some sense, to the feeling and understanding of people of the difference between a mountain and a valley. That the mountain involves effort to climb. that the air becomes, as it were, purer and clearer, that the view is enlarged, that your perspective is changed, that from the mountain height you see more fully, you perhaps understand a larger pattern. Your little cottage in the valley down there, which only had a restricted view, suddenly appears in a larger picture. Certainly, from the heights as you look down, there is an implication or a sense of power that, as it were, you are at that advantage of above. So there's something about clarity, something about comprehensiveness, something about including a larger view, something, as it were, about glory and kingdom. But there's something more than that, isn't there? In almost any experience, and you'll find this now when you read books by mountain climbers now, there is a sense of awe. There is a sense of wonder. There's a sense of a grandeur and a splendor and a scale which is greater than your own. And maybe all those things are involved a little bit in the metaphor of height. But of course, it's not just climbing mountains. We heard the verses from Psalm 8, when I consider the heavens, even the work of thy fingers, the moon and the stars which thou hast ordained, what is man that you should be mindful of him? From earlier stages, people have looked up at the splendor of the lights of heaven and felt it told them something about holiness, something about heavens. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth forth his handiwork. Night unto night uttereth speech. That is a profound and fully human reaction to the beauty of the heavens. And there's something about that that indicates to us the possibility, at least, hints to us in a kind of divine language that there might be a kingdom, that there might be a realm, that there might be a state of being, that there might be a holy dwelling place in which all the things hinted at metaphorically in those metaphors of height and beauty and glory, and of course in the unchangingness and steadfastness of the stars, that all those might be, as it were, little hints and clues about the true state of the God who calls us through these signs, that there might perhaps be a splendor and a beauty and a holiness and a clarity which would be there forever, which wouldn't be a matter of a passing moment, a little insight on a mountaintop looking at the stars, that little insight on the mountaintop looking at the stars might be a brief glimpse of how things really are, at the heart of things. So those are the kind of things that are being indicated by the heavens. Then, of course, within the Hebrew scriptures, you get some much more specific symbolism. And the symbolism with which we should be particularly concerned in the Ascension readings today is the symbolism of the cloud. We're told in Luke that a cloud received him, a cloud took him out of their sight. It's quite extraordinary language there, actually. A cloud took him out of the sight. It's almost the cloud itself is personified. But of course, there's an allusion here to the cloud of the glory of God's presence into which Moses goes when Moses comes into the presence of God, and Moses can't look at God. You know, God says, "You can't, no man sees my face and lives," and the cloud descends on the mountain. And Moses has to look the other way. We are not talking meteorology here. This is not an account of one particular kind of cloud rather than another, or a sort of urbane remark on the weather just outside Jerusalem on that particular day. The phrase that's sometimes used in the Hebrew scriptures for this presence of God is the Shekinah, the glory of God. And cloud is a very beautiful and humble way of speaking about the holiness and unknowability of God. Precisely because there was a commandment, do not represent me in any way, do not make a graven image, do not think that in the smallness of your minds you can grasp my glory. That led to a whole series of beautiful, as it were, veils and gestures and turnings aside to indicate the holy presence, but indicate that in the holy presence we ourselves cannot speak, we cannot know. And the convention that drew out of Old Testament language was to use the symbol of a cloud, a symbol which carried right on with all the mystics, actually. So the great English mystical treatise, The Cloud of Unknowing, speaks precisely of that. And indeed, other mystical writers, sometimes confusing ordinary readers, use the word darkness To speak, I said to my soul, be still, and let the darkness come upon you, which shall be the darkness of God. Darkness and cloud and height are all outward and visible indicators of a state or a beauty or a holiness. It's there, certainly, in even the more specific visions of heaven, like the one we get in Isaiah, when in the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord lifted and mighty. That's as close as you get. But then there's a smoke and a kind of fire, and you remember Isaiah says, woe is me, I'm a man of unclean lips. I'm in this holy presence. I feel I should hardly be here. So when we say Jesus was lifted up and received into a cloud, we are not to conclude, and I hope dismiss our difficulties now, concerned with some sort of Monty Python-esque, you know, little foot coming out of a cloud. We are concerned with the idea that this man, our brother Jesus, this human being who had hurt and suffered and died and whose heart had been pierced by the spear, who had loved and lost and made friends and been betrayed with a kiss, had been raised by God from the dead. God was fully in him and with him. And now in that risen body, he was somehow, this is what these symbols are indicating, going into the heart of heaven. It's an extraordinary and beautiful, and here we come to the idea of comforting and encouraging idea. The Jesus who is parted from them is also taking them with him into the heart of heaven. Isaiah said, woe is me, I'm a man of unclean lips, I come from a people of unclean lips, I don't belong here. Well, he needs say that no more. Nobody needs say that anymore. Not one of you needs say that anymore. Every one of you has a brother in heaven. You have family there already. Your nature, your particular human nature, has been taken by Jesus Christ right to the very heart of things, to the right hand of God. Heaven does not cease to be awesome, holy, beautiful, glorious, resplendent, but it is no longer somewhere that you should feel, ooh, this is a bit good, it's not for me, I don't belong here, I'm not meant to be here. The ascension of Jesus Christ is an emphatic way of God saying, yes, you are meant to be here. I took your nature upon me when I was born. I took you with me into the grave. I raised you with me, and now I'm taking you with me to where I and my Father say you do belong, into heaven itself. Paul puts it really dramatically. He says, you have died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. Let me reach to one more metaphor, if the height and being taken up metaphor doesn't work for you. There is a very, very beautiful piece of metaphorical language in the Epistle to the Hebrews, which draws on the worship of the temple. There, we think of heaven and earth, not as earth down here and heaven up here, but we think of earth, as it were, as the outer gate of things, and heaven as a kind of inward, inner heart, the inside of the cosmos, the Holy of Holies. And you remember the temple had an outer court of the Gentiles, and then it had an inner court. But then at the very end, like our sanctuary here, it had the Sanctus Sanctorum, the Holy of Holies. And you remember in the Old Testament worship, once a year on the Day of Atonement, the high priest went through the veil into the Holy of Holies. Nobody else could go there. That meant the heart of heaven. And you remember they sacrificed a lamb, and he went with the blood of the lamb on him, and he had to make atonement for the sins of the people. And you remember he wore a great robe like this, except it was sewn into it were the names of all the tribes of Israel. And he carried, as it were, symbolically, the people into the place they couldn't go through the veil to make atonement. And it was a wonderful moment. But of course, it had to be done again every year. But you remember that when Jesus died on the cross, the veil in the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. And the writer of the letters of the Hebrews understood that and wrote those famous and beautiful words, which for me personally sum up the meaning of the ascension, which are, seeing we have a great high priest who has passed into the heavens. And Hebrews goes on to talk about that, not with the blood of a lamb, not with the names sewn in, but himself, Jesus Christ, not through an outer veil, but into heaven itself, taking not our names sewn on some garment, but our very nature in his heart. That's the meaning of the ascension, that we ourselves have been taken into heaven, that we ourselves belong there. It means that the incarnation was not a passing episode, not a flying visit, not Jesus coming down from heaven, having a quick tour around, you know, getting back into the limo and being driven back, as it were, to the heavenly Hilton, like some passing head of state. He came here, he took hold of who we are, and he says, when I go home, I'm taking you with me. That's where you belong. I came to share your nature and your place on earth so that you might forever share my nature and my place in heaven. And that is where I am drawing you to. And all of that is bound beautifully into the mystery of this sacrament that we celebrate here. We remember, of course, Jesus coming to earth in the prayer, and we remember his breaking the bread and pouring the wine and sharing his body. But he is in heaven as well. And that is why at the beginning of the Eucharist we have that wonderful moment, the Sursum Corda, which we will say shortly. Lift up your hearts. We lift them up to thee. How can I lift up my heart? I can't lift up my heart. I can't personally project the heart of who I am up to heaven. But I can lift up my heart if I know that my heart is already there, that my heart is in his heart. Cor ad cor loquitur, heart speaks unto heart. I've given my heart to Jesus, and he's given his heart to me. So, of course, I have a heart in heaven. I just need to be reminded of it every so often, as I will be and you will be on this Ascensiontide Eucharist when I say, lift up your hearts. Amen.